This is a recording of The Lord Gave Cain a Sign by Kent P. Jackson, published in Interpreter, a journal of Latter-day Saint faith and scholarship, read by the author, Kent P. Jackson. Abstract. God didn't set a mark on Cain. Instead, he gave Cain a sign. The unfortunate translation of Genesis chapter 4, verse 15 in the King James Bible has been a source of much misunderstanding over the years. This article is about the English words that the King James translators chose in Genesis 4, 15, and the Hebrew words from which they are translated. It shows that the renderings of the words in that verse are inconsistent with how the KJV treats the same words and grammatical features in other passages. The result is a translation that cannot be justified from the Hebrew Bible. William Tyndale, who lived 1494 to 1536, did not advance the cause of biblical understanding when he translated the words below from Genesis 4:15 as follows. And the Lord put a mark upon Cain, that no man that found him should kill him. The Hebrew text reads, Vayashem Yahweh l'Kayin oth, levilti hakoth otho, kol motzo'o. In the succession of English Bibles that followed Tyndale's in the 16th century, the first half of this passage underwent only a minor change. The Great Bible of 1540 replaced put with set, which remained in most of the subsequent early translations. In the second half of the phrase, the Great Bible revised the wording to read, lest any man finding him should kill him, a reading that continued more or less intact to the King James Version of 1611. The members of King James's translation committee followed their base text, the Bishop's Bible, except in one word. With minor spelling and punctuation changes made since 1611, the phrase now reads, And the Lord set a mark upon Cain, lest any man finding him should kill him. My translation of Genesis 4:13 through 16 is as follows. Cain said to the Lord, My punishment is too large to bear. You've driven me off the land today, and I'll be hidden from you. I'll be a roamer and a wanderer on the earth, and anyone who finds me will kill me. The Lord said to him, Not so. Anyone who kills Cain will suffer sevenfold vengeance. So the Lord gave Cain a sign that no one finding him would kill him. Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. This article is about the words in the King James translation of Genesis 4:15 and the Hebrew words from which they are translated. My purpose in using only the KJV in the quotations is to show that its translation of Genesis 4:15 is inconsistent with how it treats the same words and grammatical features in other passages. The KJV misses the meaning of this verse and leads to an interpretation that cannot be defended on the basis of the words of the Hebrew Bible. I will discuss each of the pivotal words individually. Set, mark, upon, lest, and also examine them in tandem with each other. It will become apparent that God was not putting a mark on Cain at all. He was giving Cain a sign to accompany a promise. This correction is important because it allays the need to conjecture what the mark may have been, and it is particularly relevant in the context of speculations regarding race and skin color. First, the word mark. Tyndale translated the word mark from the Hebrew noun ot. He had encountered that word before in Genesis chapter 1, verse 14, where he translated oat with a different word, sign. Sign is, in fact, the best translation of oat in most cases. In some instances, mark has been used in English with the meaning sign, but that is not among its primary meanings. We cannot be certain why Tyndale chose it in Genesis 4:15, but he did so clearly knowing that it was an anomaly, because at every other occurrence he chose different words for oat that were more in line with its actual meaning. In all, he translated oat with sign 25 times, with token 11 times, and with miracle 11 times. Those are all valid translations of the Hebrew word. Nowhere else, aside from Genesis chapter 4, verse 15, did he translate it with Mark. All the English translations from Tyndale to the KJV followed Tyndale in rendering oat here as Mark. The word oat appears 79 times in the Hebrew Bible. Out of all those, in only this one instance, here in Genesis chapter 4, verse 15, does the King James translation render it as Mark. It was not a good word choice for Tyndale, nor is it in the KJV. In a minority of places, the KJV translates oat as token, which is a more archaic word, but also means sign. And in two places, the KJV translates it as miracle. Here are the two places. All those men which have seen my glory and my miracles, which I did in Egypt and in the wilderness, Numbers chapter 14, verse 22, and his miracles and his acts, which he did in the midst of Egypt, Deuteronomy chapter 11, verse 3. The word oat in the Hebrew Bible is used with reference to something out of the ordinary that God does to bless his people, and that he invokes as evidence of his power and loving kindness. Often it is a sign by which God confirms a promise he makes, as in the case of the rainbow that he set in the cloud after the flood. Genesis chapter 9, verses 12 through 13. This is the token of the covenant which I made between me and you, and every living creature that is with you, for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for a token of a covenant between me and the earth. The covenant promise precedes the sign, and the sign is then shown as evidence that God's promise will be fulfilled. Moses instructed the Israelites what to say if their children asked them why they needed to follow the testimonies and the statutes and the judgments. Deuteronomy chapter 6, verses 21-22. The Lord brought us out of Egypt with a mighty hand, and the Lord showed signs and wonders, great and sore, upon Egypt, upon Pharaoh, and upon all his household before our eyes. The signs and wonders is a parallel and synonymous term, that the Israelites witnessed with their own eyes were evidence of God's miraculous goodness to them, goodness that called forth in return their obedience to his testimonies, statutes, and judgments. Through Isaiah, God promised the Judahite king Ahaz that his enemies would be destroyed and that he and his people would be safe. The faithless Ahaz did not want to believe the message, so God promised to give him a sign as proof. Ahaz was invited to choose the sign. Ask thee a sign of the Lord thy God, Isaiah chapter 7, verse 11. Ahaz refused the offer, so the Lord decided to give him a sign anyway. Therefore, the Lord shall give you a sign, Isaiah chapter 7, verses 13 and 14. That sign would be the birth of a child. All these are examples of the noun oat as it appears in the Old Testament, and they are consistent with the use of the word in Genesis 4:15 and the story of Cain. In the narrative, the Lord curses Cain, who was a farmer, that the ground would no longer produce for him. As a result, he would become a roamer and a wanderer on the earth. Cain protests that his punishment is too great for him to bear. Behold, thou hast driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from thy face shall I be hid, and I shall be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it shall come to pass that every one that findeth me shall slay me. The Lord's response was clear. No one was going to kill Cain. In the King James Bible, the response begins with a weak therefore, but the Hebrew is better translated with an emphatic not so, as is seen in several translations, including my own. Whosoever slayeth Cain, the Lord said, vengeance shall be taken on him sevenfold. To confirm this forceful promise that no one would kill Cain, the Lord gives him a sign. The sign, unspecified in the narrative, provides assurance to Cain that God will honor his promise. The text gives no indication that anyone else saw the sign, and indeed it suggests that Cain was the only one to view it. Tyndale was not the inventor of the idea that a sign was something on the person of Cain, because some ancient and medieval commentators had already done the same. John Chrysostom, who lived in the 4th and 5th centuries, identified Cain's sign as tremors, paralysis, and continuing grief. Rabbis in the Talmudic era, Bereshith Rabbah, identified Cain himself as the sign, a sign for murderers or for penitents. The late 1st millennium Pirkei de Rabbi Eleazar and Rashi believed a letter of the alphabet was inscribed on Cain's arm or forehead. Ibn Ezra wrote, some say that the sign the Lord set for Cain was a horn. Others say God removed fear from Cain's heart and gave him courage to face the world. It is likely that traditions like these, still alive in the cultures of later centuries, are the reason why Tyndale selected Mark in the verse and why the King James translators retained it. The earliest known translation of the Hebrew Bible is the Greek Septuagint, translated in the 3rd and 2nd centuries BC so the Greek-speaking Jews could have access to their scriptures. In virtually every case, the Septuagint renders the word Oat with semeion, which means sign or miracle. It is found in several passages in the New Testament with those meanings, as in the following passage where it serves the same function that oat serves in the Old Testament verses above. This is John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31. And many other signs truly did Jesus in the presence of his disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written that you might believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God. The sign, the oat, or the semeion, is given so those who see it will believe. The Lord promises Cain that he will continue to live despite his murder of his brother and gives him a sign to confirm the promise. The Sabbath is a sign, an oat, of a relationship between God and his children. People set up objects to serve as reminders. Prophets engage in metaphorical actions to teach others, and worshipers engage in symbolic activities to show their devotion to God. And, more than anything else, God does amazing things to show his love and power, particularly in delivering Israel from Egypt and from other woes. The Bible uses oat in each of these cases, but none of the 79 occurrences of oat in the Hebrew Bible show God placing a curse on someone, and not a single passage uses oat to refer to anything that God sets on the person of a recipient. The translation Mark in the King James Bible is not justified. The next word is upon. The Hebrew prepositional prefix le, and we can spell that roughly L-E, translates with upon in the KJV of Genesis 4:15. It does not mean upon. It almost always means to or for. It is one of the most common features in Hebrew, and it appears about 1,300 times in Genesis alone. Of all those 1,300 Genesis occurrences, the KJV translates it as upon only here and in one other place. Upon is an inaccurate and unnecessary translation. in Genesis chapter 4, verse 15. The next word is set. The Hebrew verb seem appears over 500 times in the Old Testament. Its primary meaning is put or set, and that is how the early English translators rendered it in Genesis 4:15. From Tyndale, and the Lord put, and from the KJV, and the Lord set. Put and set are words that usually connote what we do with tangible objects that can be relocated. In the examples that follow, notice the different word choices that the King James translators made, all translating from seem. Genesis 22:9, and Abraham bound Isaac his son and laid him on the altar upon the wood. Genesis 28:18, Jacob took the stone that he had put for his pillows and set it up for a pillar. Words with these meanings are the most common uses of the verb seem. With less tangible objects, however, other English words are usually required for rendering it, depending on the English idiom. Genesis 13:16, I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth. Isaiah 49:2, he hath made my mouth like a sharp sword. The Greek Septuagint renders seem with the verb tithemi in Genesis 4:15. Like seem, its primary meaning is put or set, and it also includes meanings such as establish and appoint. As we look at how the Greek translators rendered the seem along with le, the preposition that follows it in the Hebrew of Genesis 4:15, it is clear that even translated from the Septuagint, the reading, set a mark upon Cain, is not to be desired. In place of a preposition, the Septuagint uses to, which is the Greek definite article in the dative case. It serves to identify the indirect object of the clause, the one to or for whom the Lord established the sign. The following examples use seem and oat together. In them, oat, sign, is the direct object of seem, just as in Genesis 4:15. They are analogous to that verse because in them God provides a sign and invokes it as evidence for the truth of his promise. Exodus 10:2, and many signs which I have done among them. Psalm 78:43, how he had wrought his signs in Egypt. Psalm 105:27, they showed his signs among them and wonders. Done, wrought, and showed in these verses are all translated from the verb seem, each followed by an oat, and each parallel to what is happening in Genesis 4:15. To establish the validity of God's promises. There is nothing like a mark in any of these, let alone a mark placed onto a person. The verb seem is also used to express meanings such as appoint, establish, or assign. Exodus 9:15, and the Lord appointed a set time, saying, tomorrow the Lord shall do this thing. 2 Kings 11:18, and the priest appointed officers over the house of the Lord. Daniel 1:7, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name Belteshazzar. The example from Daniel is particularly relevant to Genesis 4:15, because it includes both seem and the preposition la, translated here as unto. The law precedes the recipients. Just as the Babylonian official gave names to Daniel and his friends, the Lord gave a sign to Cain. Likewise, both seem and law are used together in the following phrases. Numbers 6:26, the Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace. Joshua 7:19, my son, give, I pray thee, glory to the Lord God of Israel. 2 Samuel 23:5, He hath made with me an everlasting covenant. And Isaiah 42:12, Let them give glory unto the Lord. In these phrases, the love precedes and identifies the intended recipient of the action of the verb seem, just as it does in Genesis 4:15. In the KJV translations above, it will be noted that seem, in present or past tense, is translated with a variety of English words, including make, give, wrought, and showed. These are not ideal translations of seem, but word choices like these are often required in order to create idiomatic English sentences, as can be seen in these verses in responsible translations like the English Standard Version and the New Revised Standard Version. The last word is the least important of the words to consider, but in some ways it drives the modern translations of the words discussed above. In Hebrew, the formation labilti negates the action of the verb that follows it, usually an infinitive. Preceding verb labilti has the meaning to not. In Genesis 4:15, the King James translators used it for lest, resulting in lest any finding him should kill him. But the Hebrew says literally, to not kill him, anyone who finds him. Those words restate the Lord's promise to Cain, and they express in words the message of the visual sign that God gave him. The word labilti is found 78 times in the Hebrew Bible. King James's translation committee rendered it as lest only here and in one other place. So lest is not a common or desirable way to express it, and the word lest is usually translated from an entirely different Hebrew word. The question about the meaning of labilti in Genesis 4:15 concerns how best to translate it in the context of the other words in the clause. Should the meaning be a sign that no one finding him would kill him, or a sign so no one finding him would kill him? The first of these translations is to be preferred because it is consistent with the meaning of the previous words in the sentence, that the Lord established a sign for Cain. This interpretation suggests that the sign was something shown to Cain. It was a sign to Cain. The second option suggests that the sign was to be shown to others who would see Cain, but that interpretation requires bending the meaning of the previous words. The King James wording, with the anomalous use of lest, adopts that meaning. Translators may have been influenced by the Greek Septuagint, which suggests so that here, as does the Latin Vulgate. That interpretation would have the sign be visible to others. There are numerous examples that show that in Genesis 4:15, a sign that no one finding him is the desired option. Notice that all the following examples of labilti come after a command or a promise. Genesis 3:11, Hast thou eaten of the tree whereof I commanded thee that thou shouldst not eat? 1 Kings 11:10, Commanded him concerning this thing, that he should not go after other gods. Jeremiah 35:14, He commanded his sons not to drink wine. Ezekiel 20:15, I lifted up my hand unto them in the wilderness, that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them. Our example of labilti in Genesis 4:15 comes after a promise that God would protect Cain, accompanied by a sign to confirm the promise. So how should we translate Genesis 4:15? Although this article is about the King James translation and Hebrew words, it is worth noting that translators have dealt with the passage in a variety of ways, as can be seen in these examples. Tyndale's contemporary, Martin Luther, in his 1534 edition, has, Und der Herr macht ein Zeichen an Cain, which suggests that the sign was on Cain's person. The modern German Einheitsübersetzung, which is the Church's preferred translation in German, has "Darauf machte der Herr dem Cain ein Zeichen," which states that the Lord made a sign for Cain. The New Revised Standard Version, the English Standard Version, and the New International Version follow in the KJV tradition, as do Hamilton and Spicer. The New American Standard Bible has, "The Lord appointed a sign for Cain," with similar words in the Evangelical Heritage Version and in Friedman's translation. Wenham's "The Lord placed a sign for Cain" is inelegant but linguistically accurate. Sarna writes that it was a sign showing that Cain is under divine protection. He prefers the traditional translation, but gives as an alternative, "The Lord gave Cain a confirmatory sign that no one who met him would kill him," which is the interpretation argued in this article. Despite the continuance of the customary wording in several modern translations, the Hebrew words of Genesis 4:15 do not support the idea in the King James translation that God put a mark on Cain. Instead, it shows that God established a sign for him as evidence that no one would kill him, despite his crime. Whatever the sign was, it was apparently sufficient to give Cain the assurance he needed. That is what the sign was for. As the medieval rabbi Ibn Ezra wrote, it was a sign that no harm would befall him. And Rabbi Ibn Ezra continued, "Cain finally believed God because of the sign." Perhaps, as Rabbi Radak wrote in the 13th century, God gave him a sign in his heart. When Cain left God's presence, he moved to another land, had a child, built a city, but presumably spent the rest of his days as a roamer and a wanderer. We are not told why God chose to preserve Cain's life and provide the promise to him. But the biblical narrative is stronger because of this story, because ever since his own time, Cain himself has been a sign that we live in a fallen world in which evil exists, and a sign that evil actions are not always recompensed by God in this life, or in the way that we would prefer. Whatever the nature of the sign, Cain's story continues to be a sign for us. A lesson we can learn from all this is that we must be careful how we deal with received traditions and how we interpret the words of received translations. Reading the scriptures cautiously and humbly protects us from indefensible conclusions. And reading the Bible with a deep dive into the meanings and issues of its ancient Hebrew and Greek words is often a necessity. As for the translation of Genesis 4:15, here are some options that attempt to put the phrase into idiomatic English. "The Lord set in place a sign for Cain that no one finding him would kill him." "The Lord made a sign for Cain that no one finding him would kill him." "The Lord showed a sign to Cain that no one finding him would kill him." And "The Lord gave Cain a sign that no one finding him would kill him." Perhaps in the case of the story of Cain, a better understanding of the Bible's words can even help change attitudes that are a legacy of the past. This has been a recording of "The Lord Gave Cain a Sign" by Kent P. Jackson, published in Interpreter, a Journal of Latter-day Saint Faith and Scholarship, Volume 68, in 2026, read by Kent P. Jackson.